Welcome to the 222 Paranormal Podcast. I'm your host, Man of the Hour, Tower of Powers, Joe Shortridge.
Hello.
And his sidekick, me. Shoddy.
Kick you in the side, in the backside.
I told somebody the other day I was going to bite him in the kneecaps. Because they didn't give me food. So, how's everybody doing? Welcome back to the show. So glad everybody's tuned in and come back. Feel like we've been gone a million years, Joe.
I know. I'm super tired today, too. I don't know why.
My goodness. Ugh. Me, too. And I was just, you know, Joe and I were talking before the show, and I think it has to do something with the retrograde. So Mercury is going into a retrograde from April 1st to the 25th. Now, this is going to be a cosmic event. It's going to last 3.5 weeks. And okay. Normally before retrograde, it makes you super sleepy and tired. But it also could be of like what's going on with the full moon last night.
Yeah. And the constant cold weather.
Yeah, that too. And so Mercury retrograde is going to be causing communication problems, calamities and travel, and technological issues. It's the first full occurrence of a Mercury retrograde in 2024.
Okay.
Now, the previous Mercury retrograde, which ended on New Year's Day in 2024, disrupted implementation of New Year's resolutions and goals. However, this time we're going to experience it in its entirety, which means we could reconnect with past love interests, face scheduling issues, and find miscommunications that may escalate into minor arguments. So Joe and I will be fighting on air.
Oh.
Now, during a retrograde, Mercury isn't actually moving backwards.
Yeah,
it's just slowed down in the comparison to the pace that the Earth is moving. Usually, Mercury moves faster than the Earth, which I didn't know. But 3 or 4 times a year, the planet slows down more than ours. This creates an optical illusion in which we think we're moving backwards or in the opposite rotational spin, but that isn't the case. When this happens, us Earthlings feel the effects on spiritual, mental, and physical levels. So we feel it all on all those. Sounds fun, right? It gets better, though. Mercury begins its planetary moonwalk during an eclipse corridor. Now, that means that Mercury enters its retrograde zone between two eclipses of the season. The lunar eclipse, which was March 25th, which is 2 days ago from us taping, and the total solar eclipse on April 8th, which we are all super excited about. And it's going right over Ohio, so y'all got to come to Toledo.
That's right.
Now, therefore, you got to be mindful of the power of our words during eclipses. We'll even feel this energy brewing before the eclipse commences. So, like, this is what we're feeling right now. The pre-retrograde begins March 18th, the day before the spring equinox, and then the post-retrograde, known as retro shade, ends on May 13th, which is going to be nearly 2 months of mercurial chaos, it says.
I'm used to that.
Now, the Mercury retrograde officially starts on April Fool's Day and is said that accidents could happen, people take things too far, potentially causing harm to themselves or others. It's essential to be very careful during this time and not to take things too personally, despite how difficult it may be. Now, Aries, the first sign of the zodiac, known for its fiery, combustible, passionate nature, after all, named after the god of war, it can lead to extreme temper tantrums, which may be a result of exhaustion, frustration, and other factors. It just goes on, but it's, you know, it's really interesting how all of these things affect our physical being.
Yeah, physical, emotional.
Mm-hmm. I wake up tired. I think that's everybody, though.
That's because we work our butts off every day.
I'm telling you, it's... Yeah, Joe and I both, you know, we work full time, do the podcast. We both have side hustles. We take care of our mom. You know, it's just like, and I'm sure everybody else, you know, listening has the same thing going on. And it's like, but you got to take that time for yourself, right? It's like, how do you squeeze in some me time?
Mm-hmm.
I read this thing, I think I posted it the other day that said, somebody was asking, do you have any plans for the weekend? And I said, nothing. And that person's like, well, you could do this, you could do this. And they're like, no, you don't understand. What I am doing
planning on...
is nothing. Yeah. That is my plan. And it's so interesting because I always feel like I just need that one day out of the week just to be and do my thing, whether it's nothing or maybe it's, things I want to do around the house or something. Yeah.
It's... You know, we talk about Mercury retrograde and that, but it is. It's a physical thing, and you need that time down to recharge. I mean, we don't sleep enough. And this may not be paranormal. It's more of the life coaching stuff, but you need that downtime, and you need to really bring your brain down to the level of actual sleep because, as you know, we have crazy dreams.
Yes.
I had a stress dream a couple of nights ago that I was being killed by Hitler.
What?
But we ended up catching Hitler, and in my dream, whoever he was with, Eva Braun or whoever, I smashed, kept hitting her face into the table. I don't know. But
Joe has some repressed aggression.
But, you know, I have these stress dreams, and it's just, you know, I don't think that my brain is down to that level yet. But, you know, on the other side, like I say, this may not be paranormal, but I do have videos out there for people that are trying to sleep better and that, so that helps. And I listen to those myself. Sometimes I don't listen to my own. Mm-hmm. I have a couple that I listen to that put me to sleep right away.
Yeah.
And it's not because they're so boring. I think it's just because it's the tones and all that. And it's, you know, we talk about like mystical healing and we talk about stuff like the curses, the Book of the Dead, which we're talking about today. But we talk about Reiki and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Go to these conventions, you see people doing Reiki all the time, and that it's healing your body through energy healing. And that's the same thing with these videos that I listen to. And some of them are just the tones of the ringing bowls.
Yeah.
Because we know that music and sound is very healing.
I've seen a couple people with those type of bowls when they were doing some energy work and like ringing them next to people's ears, like lightly, not loudly or anything. And like, you know, Kathy, who we're going to see next month, is it? No, the month after.
In May. For Parapsychon.
Yeah. So Kathy.
Phatetic.
Yes. Does Reiki work. And I've seen her, you know, do it on people and they seem very affected by it.
Yeah.
I mean, not in a bad way, but like, cleansing
it is,
you know, and I'm really excited because I think this year I'm gonna go and have her work on me a little bit, see if I can get something done with my neck.
And I think she does the sound therapy too. I think she uses the tone forks.
We gotta get around and talk about it.
Yeah, but they're so busy getting Parapsychon ready right now.
I'm excited.
That's gonna be a great event.
Yes, it's at Ohio Reformatory, and you know, over the 8.5 years we've been doing this. You guys heard us talk about it, and it's still a wonderful haunted location.
Yeah.
Right. So I was looking, you know, I always try to find some really good, interesting paranormal news for our listeners. And what I found today, and this is very recent, this is like just come out in the last week or two, or maybe the last month.
In the past few days.
Is that they have found another copy of the Book of the Dead. But what makes this one very interesting is it's 52 feet long.
Isn't that amazing?
That's crazy. I think the longest one they said was in the British Museum, which was 112 foot or centimeters or something like that.
It'd be meters.
Oh, yeah. So what they found and what they've released photos of is a newly discovered Book of the Dead, which is more than 2,000 years old. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can't really fathom 2,000 years. This is like Jesus time, right?
And, you know, I was listening to some more documentaries about Native Americans and the artifacts that they find. And it didn't click in my mind until I was listening to it. I mean, we know about like stone. We find stone stuff and, you know, slate and stuff. But to find wood or even cloth is like 100 million to 1 chance, or whatever you want to say. You know, it's so hard to find things that have lasted for hundreds of years that are made of wood or cloth. That's, in, you know, if you go to these museums and you see these Native American outfits made out of cloth, and it's not really cloth per se. Mm-hmm. It's more like tree bark, and you know, they
animal skins.
Yeah, maybe. they didn't make wool in the, you know, mm-hmm. like you think.
Yeah,
but to find a papyrus artifact that's 2,000 years old, that is got to be preserved in such a way. Now, obviously, they found it in the desert, mm-hmm. so it's very dry and that. So the
conditions. Mm-hmm. And I was just looking. It's so weird because last night when I was doing a little research on it, they were talking about the Great Pyramids. And they said that they are so particularly constructed that mm-hmm. you can't even get a razor blade in between the stones.
Yeah.
This is how precise they are. So these, you know, tombs that they're finding must be like perfectly sealed conditions.
Yeah. Now the main stones of the pyramids are not like that mm-hmm. because they were covered.
Yeah.
They actually covered them. So they weren't very precise. But when you go inside and you find mm-hmm. these tombs, the tombs are carved at perfect right angles.
Yes.
They're perfectly flat or perfectly straight. A lot of the statues in that they find are polished to a mirror finish.
It's crazy.
You know, yeah. That's why I truly believe that they had a lot more technology than what we know.
Oh, for sure. And what's interesting is, I didn't know this, and I thought I had heard it before, but maybe I forgot, that the pyramids were covered in limestone. They were white.
Yes.
Perfectly uh-huh. smooth with a gold cap on the top. And they think or liken it to, you know, like a battery or an energy source or something, which I would, can you imagine how bright that must have been with the sun
mm-hmm.
beating on a pure white limestone? And what they said what happened to limestone is over the years, people would come and steal it and then build their like palazzos or whatever they're called over there with the limestone that once was on the pyramid.
Yeah, you can see on the Great Pyramid towards the top, the, mm-hmm. the capstones are still there.
Mm-hmm.
But the rest are all gone.
That's so interesting. So when they found and released the photos of the ancient scroll, the 52-foot-long Book of the Dead Papyrus was discovered in a place called Saqqara. And I hope I'm saying that right.
It's either Saqqara or Saqqara.
I'll just say Saqqara. Yeah, and you guys just say that. Just listen.
If it's wrong, send us hate mail. Send us tons of mail or comment on this show.
Yeah, comment.
Come on. Now, leave us some positive comments on the shows. Yeah. Even if it just says, hey, Joe's great. You know, just something like that.
Snacks. Just put snacks.
Yeah.
Okay, so there was 10 images that show ancient illustration of gods and scenes from the afterlife, as well as text written on the documents. Now, they carbon dated it to like 2,000 years old. The archaeologists discovered the Book of the Dead Papyrus within a coffin in a tomb near the Step Pyramid Dozier? Okay, I'm just going to say Dozier, and if I'm saying it wrong, too bad. And announced this discovery in January, the 14th, actually, for Egyptian Archaeologists Day. And this is the first time that they've ever released images. And I think they just released them right in February. Now, it's not unusual for ancient Egyptians to bury the Book of the Dead with the deceased, but what they didn't, you know, they didn't call it that at the time. Rather, modern archaeologists coined the term the Book of the Dead to refer to the collection of texts that ancient Egyptians would help guide their journey into the afterlife. Now, the 52-foot-long scroll was found at Saqqara in May of 2022, and it contains chapters from the Book of the Dead. It was recently restored and translated into Arabic and now is on display in the Egyptian Museum in Cairo. The text is written in Heretic. It's a script derived from hieroglyphics. Now, when they found it, it was all rolled up in a coffin belonging to a man named Amos. Not to be confused with the pharaoh that lived in earlier times, but this man's name was mentioned in the papyrus about 260 different times. The researchers said he lived about 300 BC, which was at the beginning of the Ptolemaic dynasty. And that is a dynasty that descended from one of Alexander the Great's generals, which Cleopatra was in that lineage, I guess okay. you would call it. A team of researchers performed extensive conservation work so they could actually unroll it. This guy's tomb was located at the south step of the pyramid built for Djoser, a pharaoh from the third dynasty who ruled from 2630 BC until 2611 BC. And the pyramid was built long before the time of Amos, but it wasn't unusual to find Amos's tomb where it was found. The people in ancient Egypt, sometimes liked to be buried near the pyramids of long dead pharaohs. Now, when they unrolled the papyrus, it was so interesting. It was written in black and red ink. And the quality of the writing indicates that it was written by a professional. Despite the size of the roll, there are longer books of the dead text. Like I mentioned, the one in the British Museum, it was originally 121 feet, but I think some of it they had to kind of piece together.
Okay.
There might have been some parts missing, so maybe I misspoke earlier about the length. Now, this Book of the Dead contains illustrations. The image appears to show Osiris, the Egyptian god of the underworld. In Egyptian mythology, Osiris's life was ritually restored after he died, something that the ancient Egyptians was hoping would happen to them in the afterlife. The images show more details about Osiris. It shows him sitting on a throne wearing an ataf crown, which is a type of crown that is also always shown on the head of Osiris. And it appears there are offerings being made to him, as well as a picture of a creature called Amit, who was a deity who consumed anyone who was not worthy of being ritually restored in the afterlife. Now, the image appears to depict offerings and a scene of a couple venerating Egyptian deities. And the couple may be Amos and his wife, whose name isn't mentioned or is not known. But not much is known about this Amos, other than he was wealthy enough to have an elaborate copy of the Book of the Dead made for him. So it must have been, you know, well off at some point. There's a number of scenes illustrated in one particular section of the book. On the far left, a cow appears to be being led somewhere, perhaps given as an offering. And there's a number of images depicting boats, which is often used to navigate the afterlife. Now, if you remember when they went into the Tutankhamun, there was like, I don't know if it was a full-size boat or if it was just, you know, they found that.
I think it was full-size. There,
everything that he would need to, you know, go into the afterlife, including animals. And I believe there were servants that were left in there or went in there and just died, I guess you would say. But, you know, it's just really interesting that this new copies been found.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know how many copies there are within the world, but I can't imagine there's that many if it was that expensive.
The thing is, I believe that the pharaohs and all that were all buried with books of the dead because it was like a guidepost or a guide manual to travel the afterlife. It had all the information they needed for their journey in the afterlife. And lots of times too, it had the stuff they needed. Just like Tutankhamun, his grave or his tomb had all the stuff he needed in the afterlife.
Yeah.
And that's why they put all this stuff in there, is that when they read the Book of the Dead, it gave them the guidelines and told them how to move on and how to use all this stuff.
It's interesting because there was honey in the tomb and it was still good.
Yeah. They used honey a lot for stuff. I mean, there was a lot of burials with honey because it's a preservative.
And it's the only food that never, ever goes bad.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't try it, though. Like, no. Would you taste a 2,000-year-old?
I don't know. I know when honey? We did the story on the honey. I know when we did the story on the honey mummies. I remember talking about people that actually tried it.
I couldn't do it. Now, you know, just taking it back a step, for some of our listeners don't know you know, with the Book of the Dead or how it came about. So basically, it was developed from a tradition of funerary manuscripts that date back to the Egyptian Old Kingdom. And it's interesting because, like, when we think of the Egyptians, we think of, like, Cleopatra. Mm-hmm. She's more closer to our times than we are to, or, you know, to the dinosaurs were to the old kingdom. That's mm-hmm. how old, you can't think about, like,
yeah, 'cause
that time frame. It's so
interesting. You think about, like, the pyramids are around 5,000 years old. The Sphinx, you know, people, they think that it's around 5,000, but there's a lot of people that don't agree with that. They feel that it's up to 12,000 years old because of the weathering that's on the mm-hmm. walls that surround it.
And they think, too, that originally it had a lion's head.
Yeah, it did.
And they recarved it into what it is now.
They did, because they know that for a fact is that all the other Sphinx. Now, a Sphinx is basically a lion with a man's head, okay? Mm-hmm. But they know that this had a bigger head on it than what is actually there now, because they know that it was recarved in the image of one of the pharaohs. I can't think of his name. Yeah. And the thing about that, too, is the Egyptians were really good at making things proportionally right. Mm-hmm. Their statues, you could take a lot of their statues. If you take and copy half the face and flip it over, it matches up perfectly the other side. The symmetry and all that of their carvings was perfect. But the Sphinx isn't. The head's too small for the body. Mm. That's how they know that it had a bigger head, and they're assuming it was a lion's head, even though a Sphinx has a human's head on it. So if it was a human's head, it was a lot bigger, and they carved it down to what it is now.
Mm-hmm. What's interesting, too, is the Nazis used to use it for target practice. That's why it doesn't have a nose. The Nazis back in that day were shooting the nose off. Maybe that's why you dreamed about what you dreamed about.
There you go.
Because you knew we were going to talk about this on the weirdness. Preemptive.
What do you call it? Precognition.
Pre-something.
Which is the show I'm working on.
Okay. Now, funerary texts were used first around the 5th dynasty, which is like 24 BC. But I don't know. I think it probably went back further, but maybe those records are just gone.
Yeah, because it takes so much to save. Yeah.
Now, the texts were written on the walls of burial chambers within pyramids and were exclusively used for the use of the pharaohs and from the 6th dynasty for queen. Now, the pyramid texts were written in unusual hieroglyphic style. Many of the hieroglyphs represented humans or animals and were left incomplete or drawn mutilated, and most likely to prevent them from causing any harm to the dead pharaohs, which mm-hmm. is interesting. Now, the purpose of the pyramid text was to help the dead king or queen take his place amongst the gods and to reunite him with the divine father Ra. And at this period in the afterlife, it was seen as being in the sky rather than the underworld described in the Book of the Dead, which is kind of interesting. Towards the end of the Old Kingdom, the pyramid text ceased to be exclusively a royal privilege and were adopted by regional governors and other high-ranking officials, like this guy that they found mm-hmm. In his tomb. Tombs are very interesting, though.
Like, yeah.
You know, when I think of a tomb, you know, I always think of just like Tutankhamun's tomb.
Yeah.
Because it's just so the most popular. And what's interesting is there's always this, I don't know, attachment of a curse to a tomb. And Joe and I were going to share some of that with you.
Yeah, the interesting thing about tombs also is a lot of people think the pyramids are actually tombs, but they've never found any bodies in those pyramids. Mm-hmm. Now, they have found tombs in other pyramids, but the big pyramids that we know of, that we always say the pyramids, those don't have tombs in them. And even though they say the king's chamber and the queen's chamber, technically we really don't even know what those chambers were used for, because they don't have any writing in there that says that they're for this pharaoh or whatever. Mm-hmm. They just call them the king and queen's chamber because one's bigger than the other.
Okay.
And they just call them that. I don't know when they started calling them that, but like I said, there's no indication that burials were ever even thought of for those pyramids.
That's so interesting. And so, like, most of the pharaohs were buried in the Valley of the Kings, mm-hmm. right? Or the Valley of the Queens. I am feeling there's probably a lot more that we haven't discovered. Oh,
there is. There is. Because it's so big.
Yeah.
And, you know, we talk about, you know, like in the Book of the Dead, we talk about dynasties going back, you know, 17th dynasty, mm-hmm. the 25th, 26th dynasty, you know, stuff like that. I don't know how long a dynasty is, but, you know.
Is it 1,000 years?
I don't know.
We'll have to look that up.
But the thing about tombs also is people think of these tombs as being like Tutankhamun's, which mm-hmm. was huge and engraved and painted and, you know,
full of gold
and all that. But majority of the tombs that they find are just holes in the ground mm-hmm. that might have some stuff in them, you know, for their journey through the afterlife. But most of the tombs are just like burial sites, and some tombs even have multiple people in them. Sort of like our cemeteries now.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about tombs, but the
like mausoleums.
I was trying to think of the name.
Me too.
The mausoleums are tombs.
Do you know that they have not found Cleopatra's tomb? And they're talking that she said that you would never find it.
Okay.
But, you know, everybody's been looking for it. But they think that it might be, you know, not in the Valley of the Kings or the Queens, mm-hmm. but somewhere else. And I can't remember the name of the city. I'll have to look it up. But that, can you imagine once you find that? I think it would be phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it's adorned with so much stuff, or do you think it's just a tomb? I would imagine it have tons of, like, Tutankhamun.
Mm-hmm. Well, she was extremely well-educated and spoke many languages, so I would assume that it's going to be full of more scholarly type things like books. I'm sure she had jewelry. I'm sure she had all of that. Interesting, you know, like I hope in my lifetime that they find it because I want to know what's in it.
Yeah. But a lot of the curses that we think about, mm-hmm. you know, and it's sort of like that the black sarcophagus they just found, it was so full of black water.
Mm-hmm.
And they talk about a curse for that. And I think the curse of that was just that the water was so poisoned from all the thousands of years of goo or whatever it is.
Ew.
And there was actually people that drank that water.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Are they alive?
I don't know after they, but I do know that people drank the water.
What the heck?
And if they did die, they would say it was a curse. No, it was just all the goo and nasty stuff that they drank.
Why would you ever? That's like people eating those like 100-year-old deviled eggs or whatever they are. It's so gross.
Your curse
it's
is
it's a delicacy.
You're going to be in your little room for hours.
Right? If you make it out. It's bad enough when you get food poisoning from Little Caesar's pizza.
And the whole family.
All 11 of us got terrible. I mean, to the point, like, we had to call a rescue squad. It was terrible. We had the worst food poisoning. But we survived. But I can't imagine, like, I've heard, too, that people, you know, like, I don't know if it was the Victorian or Edwardian age, one of those ages, mm-hmm. they were obsessed with, you know, Egyptians and mummies, and they would grind up these mummies
yeah.
and, like,
yeah.
eat them or snort yep. them or mm-hmm. bathe in them. Or, I don't know. Disgusting.
There were mummy thieves that would steal them and actually put them for... I saw pictures of a guy selling mummies, and he just got them propped up against the wall for sale.
Can you imagine? Don't ever prop me up for sale after I die. Just
but, the you know, no. lots of times what I believe the curses are, one, you have in these tombs, they probably have snakes and that.
Mm-hmm.
The gases that are produced in these sealed sarcophagus, you know, you mm-hmm. got to remember, like we talked about earlier, how precise they were. Mm-hmm. They were airtight sealed. And you're talking thousands of years of that air fermenting. I mean, we go to mausoleums and that right now, and you think, well, it doesn't stink in here. Well, they're ventilated so good.
Mm-hmm.
And there are circumstances where the funeral directors and that will hear explosions, and it's actually the caskets exploding, because nowadays people are being put in these caskets that are sealed tight
mm-hmm.
so that no water gets in or nothing. But the gases build up so much that they actually explode. They don't hear them underground, but they hear them in the mausoleums and that. They'll actually hear them explode, and I guess it's pretty messy. But but that's what I think a lot of these curses are these gases that are escaping
mm-hmm.
and the people die because of the gases or the bugs or whatever.
Yeah. I totally get that. And I think, you know, that that's interesting and very scientific. But I also believe that, you know, and to each his own, everybody can believe what they want. But I, you know, I think some of these pharaohs or people or maybe they did put curses.
Yeah.
You know, like anybody who comes to rob my grave of my things will be, you know, cursed in the seven generations of their family.
You know, we talk about paranormal stuff all the time. And, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, it's possible.
Is there some examples of curses you have for us, Joey?
We have 10, but we probably won't talk about all of them. But
we'll get some good ones, though.
There's a report by Sawi Hawass of a young boy who's sick with terminal illness. The boy loved Egypt, and one day he went to the Egyptian Museum and looked into the eyes of the mummy of the king Ahmose. Afterwards, the boy was miraculously cured from his illness without any explanation. Later, the boy went on to study Egyptian culture, and he was interested in the Hyksos period. So it's kind of a reverse curse.
Mm-hmm.
He looked into the eyes of the mummy, and he was healed.
Interesting, because a lot of, you know, in Christianity, we go to these, you know, incorruptible saints or use relics, which I'm really getting into researching relics too right now. I don't know why. And people, you know, claim to be healed after they touch, you know, like a relic or, you know, the tomb of, you know, one of these saints or something. So that's very interesting.
Yeah. You know, do they have powers? You know, we don't know. And it all goes back to your intent, but, you know, maybe these relics do have powers. Maybe they can come from the afterlife and heal or stuff like that. But
a reverse curse, everybody.
There was an archaeologist who was assisting with a removal of two mummies from the Bahajara Athos tomb. Yes, we are butchering these names. I'm sorry.
It's come Charlie.
Okay. So they were removing two mummies from Charlie's tomb, and he was haunted by the dreams of children during this procedure. The dreams only stopped after the mummy of the father was returned with the children at the museum.
Oh my gosh.
Many people involved with removing the mummies or traveling with them in their possession have been haunted by strange dreams until the mummies were no longer in their possession.
Wonder how many museums that have mummies or ancient Egyptian artifacts have hauntings. We should start calling them. We'll just start calling across the United States. Yeah, just call up
and say, hey,
can I talk to the Egyptologist, please? Yeah. Now, this is a famous one that, you know, you've seen on all the ghost shows probably in the last 5 or 10 years. There's a statue in a Manchester, England museum that is supposedly haunted with an Egyptian deity or whatever you want to call it. So it shows that the statue rotated 180 degrees every 3 days, seemingly on its own. Now, the statue was in a glass case and untouched by everyone except for the curator, who kept turning it back. The museum's curator claimed that the ancient Egyptians believed that if a mummy was destroyed, then the statuette could be used as an alternative vessel for the spirit. There was a time-lapse video, which I think everybody saw in like Paranormal Caught on Tape or whatever, that sped up that showed the statue moving without being touched. Now, scientists offer another explanation, claiming that the friction between two surfaces could be moving the statue, but regardless, it's still really weird.
Yeah.
I saw that and I was like, oh, I was thinking, you know, like the people walking by and, and all that, but you know, if there aren't people walking by at nighttime and it's moving.
But it's a museum. And museums usually have thick marble or stone or that floors. Plus the buildings themselves are usually made of marble, you know, with pillars or whatever. I don't know what this one has, but just thinking about like the Toledo Art Museum. If trucks were driving by or people were walking, their feet are in the truck. Like my house. when the school buses go by, it shakes the whole house.
Yeah.
But you're talking a building, a museum, the vibrations are not going to be that enough to turn a stone statue.
Mm-hmm. I wonder how much it weighs.
I don't know.
Okay. So the tomb of Sen Mut. The curse was written on the wall of this tomb of Sen Mut, which translates to mean his lifetime shall not exist on this earth. Now, the tomb was made for Queen Hatshepsut's royal advisor.
Okay.
And he was a powerful man at the time, and he allowed to build the tomb close to the one that they were building for the Queen Pharaoh, which was a rare privilege for anyone who was a non-royal blood. Now, after the queen died, he was forgotten, and the tomb was never completed. The paintings and the subscriptions inside were really well preserved, including the ancient curse. Now, it's not open to the public, but they are trying to get it accessible for people to go in. So, basically, it's almost like graffiti. Like, mm-hmm. anyone who enters here shall yeah. be cursed. Along that lines. Well, it's interesting. He must have, you know, been held in very high regard if she allowed him to put his tomb right next, yeah. you know, to hers. Interesting.
So a young Zawi Hawass learned of the dangers of excavating an Egyptian tomb after working on the tomb of Kam Abel Bahul. I believe that's how you say his name.
Sure. Site.
On the first anniversary of the excavation, his cousin died. Then his uncle on the second and his aunt on the third anniversary of the opening of this tomb.
Wow. That's
years later,
weird.
While working in the Pyramid of Giza, he uncovered a curse that means all people who enter this tomb make evil against the tomb and destroy it. May the crocodile be against them in the water of the snakes against them and on the land. So in other words, it's basically saying that anybody that disrupts this tomb will die mm-hmm. because of the curse of the crocodile snakes. And, you know, in other words, yeah. those are the animals that actually killed people. So that would represent mm-hmm. death. And he did experience this because his cousin, his uncle, and his aunt all died on the anniversaries of the opening of that tomb.
That's crazy. But interesting.
Mm-hmm. That led to him believing that the mummies should never be on display. And that's one of the things that he talks about, too, is about people that put these mummies on display. But the thing is, I was listening to documentaries about the artifacts that they find in Indian burial mounds. Mm-hmm. And, you know, is it right to take them and show them as pieces of art or whatever. Mm-hmm. I think it is, because even though you're taking those from the tomb, you're living their legacy by showing them to other people.
Well, it's history, you know, yeah. we want to know about our past. Mm-hmm. And I think if it was recent, within 100 years or more, or you know, maybe under 100 years, mm-hmm. it would be a little weird or disrespectful. Yeah. But I think after a certain point, you know, maybe 500 years or so, I mean, if you happen upon it, those people aren't using that anymore, right?
No.
They probably made it to the afterlife yeah. by now. And, you know, history is fascinating. Like, maybe they put this in place 5,000 years ago, knowing that the people to come would be able to understand how they lived
yeah.
and the way they lived and appreciate the art.
It carries on their legacy, yeah. carries on their life, you know?
Why wouldn't, I mean, if you had this beautiful tomb that you never wanted the outside world to see, it's kind of sad because mm-hmm. we could be missing out on remembering the history or learning because, like you said before, and I don't know what show it was on, but we have no idea what the technology that was used to build, say, the pyramids.
Yeah.
But it's so fascinating. We, as modern people, cannot figure it mm-hmm. out. But maybe that it's in somewhere. Maybe it's in some text in some tomb that's not been discovered.
Like a room underneath the right paw of the Sphinx,
yeah.
which they found. And Zawahiri Hawass will not allow anybody in there.
Maybe it has, though.
Yeah, the Egyptian government won't allow anybody in that.
Didn't it flood with water or something around that, the Sphinx?
Well, no, the erosion around the sides are caused by water. And there has been water in that area for 12,000 years or whatever, you know. That's why they believe that the Sphinx is three times or so years older than the pyramids themselves.
And people don't understand, there's like 3,000 pyramids in Egypt or in, you know, northern Africa. And
there's pyramids all
Egypt
over the
world. Egypt is in Africa, everybody, just let you know.
There's pyramids all over the world. Yeah. There's pyramids here.
Yeah. It's fascinating. Mm-hmm. I still want to know if there's pyramids in Antarctica, which they say there are. And it was tropical back, a million years ago.
You know, and if they're building them all over, why not?
Yeah.
You know.
Do you think they're connected? Do you think that there's somehow the energy points? Yeah. Here we go again on our rabbit holes.
Well, they have measured vibrations and energy vibrations in all these places.
It's so deep. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I stay awake at night thinking about these things.
Yeah.
Is why I don't get any beauty sleep.
So the last one, let's talk about King Tut.
Yes, the famous King Tut. Remember that song by who sang that?
Steve Martin.
Yes, Funky Tut. Let's talk about Funky Tut.
All right.
So the curse of the pharaoh struck again with the opening of King Tut's tomb in 1923. It launched the modern era of Egyptology, which is, you know, the most famous cases because many people at the original opening of the tomb died before their time under weird condition, weird circumstances. And it was very close to the time that they opened that tomb. While working at the tomb, Howard Carter, who was in charge of the project, sent a messenger to his house. On the night of the arrival, he heard a faint cry and saw Carter's canary being eaten by a cobra, the sign of the Egyptian monarchy. Now, the incident was reported in New York Times in December of 1922. So there was many other instances with, you know, Carver dying mysteriously. Mm-hmm. There was another guy who I think was his protege or something. Workers mysteriously died. Odd circumstances. I think we talked about a lot on our one of our other shows when we talked about King Tut.
That's the thing about his tomb that they excavated. People that have, like in museums, people that have dealt with them, with the artifacts, have had weird situations happen. People have been in car accidents that they can't explain. Unexplained deaths where people just die in their sleep.
Yeah.
Or have weird diseases, you know. And that's a lot of the people that actually started taking the original stuff out way back then had strange diseases they couldn't explain. Different growths on their arms and stuff. And they all put it back as being the curse, which, you know, we don't know. We talk a lot about metaphysical stuff, and we just don't know. I mean, there could be a curse on that. And it's understandable that they would put a curse on it to save them, because look at, like we talked about earlier, the people that are stealing the mummies and selling mummies, because mummy trading was a big thing back in the, like, 30s and maybe the 40s. You know, if you owned a mummy in your house, you had parties and brought the mummy out and showed everybody. And some people, like you said, ground them up and did whatever, you know.
Yeah. Lord Carnarvon. That's who I was trying to think of. Yeah. So he had mummies at his Highgrove estate, I think it was, where they filmed Downton Abbey. And lots of, you know, spooky things that happen related to that. But it's interesting because I was just, I don't know why it just went in my head, but I had read somewhere that every time you say a bad word or a curse word, you're putting a curse out into the universe. Yeah, so every time you say the F-bomb, and I was like, oh, duh, that's what they call curse words. I put two and two together, I guess.
I saw a thing a long time ago about the F-word.
Yeah.
And it was like this, you know, back in the 50s, the different documentaries they had for, like, the atom bomb and stuff like that. It was always that one voice that they talk. Well, this guy did that, and he had, and it was about the F word, and he use it as a vowel, use it as a noun. You know, I mean, it was so funny. But yeah, this is so interesting. You know, the Book of the Dead, like we said, it's not just one book; it's a bunch of books, and it's a book that they would bury or even carve, like you said, in the walls to help that spirit transfer to the afterlife. And you know, we kind of do that now with different, you know,
epitaphs on the gravestones.
Yeah.
And, you know, people put things into people's coffins that they want to remember.
Yeah.
I think we put something in Dad's coffin.
I'm sure we did. I don't remember.
Lotto ticket or something.
But even, you know, you go into the mausoleums that we go into, like that one that we go into, and I hear voices in that mausoleum.
But I have nightmares about that. Like, it's so scary.
But, you know, we look at all the urns, and they have next to the urns, they have all the same, you know, pictures and stuff from when that person lived to remember them. And it's the same thing. It's like putting them in little tombs.
Yeah, I saw, and this is totally unrelated to the show, but I was watching some video, and there was one of those mausoleums was ginormous.
Oh, I can imagine.
There was those little boxes, you know, like memory boxes. Where, you know, they put the urn in. But there were thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands.
And
it went on forever and ever. I don't know if it was in California or where it was. I'm going to have to look it up.
Yeah.
It was huge.
Think about this. Those buildings can never be torn down.
Unless they crumble.
Unless they crumble. And
it would take a million years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
so insane.
This one that I'm talking about is here in Toledo. And every time I go in there, I hear voices. And I mean audible voices.
Yes, and nobody's in there.
I've got it on video. I did put up the video on YouTube, and I walked in, and you could clearly hear a little girl going, "Hello."
I got goosebumps right now. Y'all should have goosebumps too. And if you come to Toledo, we'll, you know, DM us, and we'll tell you where it's at.
Yeah, but very interesting. You know, I'm still more into the Native American stuff, but I love Egyptian stuff.
I do too.
And I know that, you know, there's a few museums that I've been to, but I would love to go to like the Cairo Museum or stuff like that to see the amount of stuff they have. I do know that here in Toledo we have Egyptian, a room full of Egyptian stuff and all that.
Yeah, it's really cool.
But I'd still like to go see the original stuff.
I went to the British Museum when I went to London, and we saw, I don't kind of remember, but, you know, it's like one of those things you need like 2 days to go through it. But I think we did look through the Egyptian stuff because, you know, I was really into it back then, like really into it.
Yeah.
But anyways, folks, our listeners, thank you for sticking with us. And, you know, we ask you if you are interested. We do have a Patreon now where we have different levels. If you want to donate to the show, we do have a donate button on our website. You can check it out. Joe faithfully posts where we're going to be our next conventions. You guys can come out and tell us your ghost stories.
Our next one
live.
Is going to be Parapsycon in May.
Come to Ohio Reformatory. Spooky, spooky. With your admission, you get to go all around the entire place.
Yeah, you can go wherever you want.
And it's so cool and so amazing and so big you'll get lost.
Yeah. So yeah, get up there on our website. We have, like Jen said, our Patreon right on the front page. Just click on that and help us out any way you can. And today's show is definitely brought to you by Jen's Closet. If you need any clothing, high-end clothing, shoes, bags, whatever, check out her Poshmark page. The link will be in the description.
And Joe has one too.
I do, but all I have is a few jeans on there, and I haven't sold any. Well, I did sell a shirt. So.
Well, congratulations.
Yeah.
No, but, you know, it's just, it's really a great place to get good stuff at reasonable prices.
Yeah.
Also, you know, if you are a fan of the show, please comment on our Facebook. We're on Instagram. I post a little bit there. You know, I always put some really cool and interesting and funny stuff there. But, you know, share it with all your friends so they have some new podcasts to listen to.
Yes.
You know, it's getting to the point we're almost to our ninth season, which is incredible in the world of podcasting because, you know, typically podcasts don't make it past the first, you know, year.
Yeah.
And we've made it to nine, and we have over 400 shows. So you guys
haven't missed a week. Haven't repeated a show yet.
Even when Joe had a stroke and I had COVID.
Yeah.
And we both had food poisoning. Yeah. So, you know, we are loyal to our listeners 100%.
All right. Well, thank you for listening, and we will talk to you next week. Let's leave, like we always do, with some Jeff and Bob.
Have a great week, everybody. As we live through the struggle.